This is an I Am Listening original podcast.
Well, this is the idea of the surveys, to get the public's views, especially makes them better, because that's our top priority. I want people, all people, to be safe in Maidstone, but especially women and girls. I want them to be safe, feel safe when they go out of an evening and not have to worry about things. But I'm afraid that's not what it's like at the moment out there.
Welcome to the Kent Politics Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Kent Politics Podcast. I'm Nikki White, Senior News Editor with the KM Media Group, and I'll be looking at some of the things our councils and MPs have been up to this week. First up, it's all change again at Kent County Council. This week, the political landscape of KCC received a shake-up at the hands of ex-Reform members. Seven former Reform UK councillors, six of whom were expelled in the fallout from the leaked video meeting scandal, have joined Restore Britain, which is led by Rupert Lowe, the MP for Great Yarmouth in Norfolk. He himself was elected as a Reform MP in 2024, but lost the whip from Nigel Farage's party in March 2025. His party is considered to be much more radical than Reform itself, and Councillor Bill Barrett, one of the expelled Reform councillors who has not joined Restore Britain, said as much, telling Kent Online it's too right-wing for his taste. Nonetheless, the group is now the third largest at County Hall and the second largest opposition group behind the Liberal Democrats, the official opposition, with 12 members. Councillor Maxine Fothergill, one of the new Restore Britain councillors, said that she thinks it's quite likely they will attract more disaffected Reform members and could supplant the Liberal Democrats as the official opposition. The group also told us that they will be meeting to elect their leader next week, a contest in which Councillor Fothergill would like to be considered. Reform UK have been tight-lipped about the affair, but one local source in the party said to us that Restore Britain are welcome to our dregs. Local Democracy reporter Dan Essen explains more.
So Restore Britain is a relatively new political party. It was formed by Rupert Lowe. He's a multi-millionaire businessman and the Member of Parliament for Great Yarmouth. He was elected in 2024 as a member of Reform UK. But he, in March 2023, he had the whip from that party removed from him. There were claims of bullying and threats and that kind of thing, which were never reach any kind of legal or official action. But there was also a political side to his leaving of Reform UK. He claims that Nigel Farage was apprehensive about the idea of endorsing mass deportations and this sort of thing. So essentially, the short of it is that Restore Britain shares quite a lot of DNA with Reform UK, but is widely perceived to be significantly more radical and, in the eyes of many, much, much further to the right than Reform UK is. So there are now seven members of KCC who are members of Restore Britain. They are Isabella Kemp, Maxine Fothergill, Brian Black, Paul Thomas, Oliver Bradshaw, Robert Ford, and Dean Burns. Of those seven, six of them were independent up until this point. They were all expelled as part of the fallout of a leaked video of Councillor Lyndon Kemp-Caron swearing at councillors in a meeting regarding local government, while discussing local government reorganisation last year. But one of those, Dean Burns, he wasn't expelled from the party then. He was a cabinet member. He was sort of quietly and mysteriously removed from his cabinet post back in December. And he has defected straight from Reform to Restore Britain in the past day. Don't know whether it will be meaningfully damaging for Reform UK. The Rupert Lowe is basically, he's got a good game on Twitter. He's got a lot of followers. I think he made the most money of any member of parliament from social media in the past year by declarations of interest, but he's not really a major national political figure. He was elected as a member of Reform. Reform UK has an awful lot of brand recognition by virtue of the fact that it is Nigel Farage's party. Rupert Lowe doesn't have that level of charisma or name recognition or popularity. And not to mention, KCC isn't going up for a vote anytime soon and probably never will, because KCC is being abolished in the next couple of years and will be replaced with a unitary authority. Obviously, those authorities will have completely different geography from the existing county council. It's very hard to say what any kind of vote in those would look like. But as it stands, Restore Britain is a relatively small party led by and has one member of parliament. And I'm confident saying I don't think it poses any real electoral threat to Reform at this point. So for Kent County Council, thus far, essentially not too much changes. However, Restore Britain are now, with seven members, are now the third largest group on KCC after the ruling Reform group and the Liberal Democrats, who are the official opposition. The Liberal Democrats have 12 members. So in theory, if Restore Britain gained another 5 or 6 people, they could themselves become the official opposition. How likely that is, I don't quite know. But Bill Barrett, an independent councillor who's formerly of Reform, he tells me he believes that that more people will join Restore Britain, and that essentially there's an appetite for splitting in the Reform administration, which is also what some people like Anthony Hook of the Liberal Democrats have told me. But as it stands at the moment, Reform UK are still in majority control of the council. The Liberal Democrats are still the opposition. Might make some people in the Reform administration nervous that that there's now a separate right-wing party with some of their old former colleagues in it, to whom anyone who's dissatisfied could quite readily defect.
Meanwhile, over in Medway, as part of the financial measures to try to balance the books over the past few years, a number of council-owned properties have been sold off. A list of 30 properties was created in October 2024, which were deemed to be surplus to requirements and were costing the council more than was financially viable to maintain. It was agreed then to start putting these properties out and to sell them for the best price possible. Most recently this week, the Railway Street Industrial Estate in Gillingham has been sold for £775,000. It's a 10,000 metre square industrial estate of 15 units. Prior to this, the Raynham Shopping Centre, which is home to more than 20 shops including a Tesco, Greggs and a B&M, was sold for £1.5 million in December. And Gillingham Business Park was also sold for nearly £7 million. The council says it is selling off these properties at the best prices it can get and insists there's no hurry to shift them at a fire sale price. They have also repeatedly said that the evaluation of the authority's portfolio and the selling of those plots which aren't cost effective is something which should have been regularly done but wasn't by the previous administration, and therefore they are selling more to catch up with where they should have been. Other changes with those 30 properties included handing over the responsibility for maintaining Temple Manor, a Grade 1 listed manor house in Strood, to English Heritage. Medway Council's budget meeting is next week, where it will take a third and they hope final year of exceptional financial support. An officer seemed positive that the authority is now on a firmer financial footing, in part because of the measures such as this. Also in the towns, yobs on e-bikes and e-scooters who gather in the car park of a leisure centre at night have been accused of intimidating those who live nearby. Problems with antisocial behaviour at Cosington Park Sports Centre in Raynham is nothing new, but it's usually more of an issue in the summer when the evenings are lighter and much warmer. Police and the council are cracking down on the problem, but ward councillor for Raynham North, Councillor George Perfect, says people have raised significant concerns about the gatherings at the skate and car park late at night. Here's what he had to say.
There are significant concerns that people have got regarding the skate park at Cosington Park and some of the other surrounding parts of Cosington. Obviously, the leisure centre reopened very recently following a significant rebuild. And of course, that's opened up the site once again to significantly more traffic, particularly in the car park, but also in the wider park, which is now much more accessible to the public. Cosington is quite unique in that it's fairly open to the public, both at night and also in the daytime, and it's quite difficult to secure, apart from a number of gates which are locked. Some of the challenges that I think residents have been experiencing very recently has been, as I say, some antisocial behaviour, particularly around the car park and the skate park after hours late at night. It's usually an issue that we experience more and have done in the past in Cosington Park in the summer, unusual to get it at this time of year. But I think, yeah, there is significant concern from residents.
It can be quite intimidating, I suppose. There are a lot of facilities there at Cosington. You get families, you get young people, you get older, sometimes vulnerable people. And it can be quite intimidating if you do see groups of people around on e-bikes and e-scooters just when you're trying to go about your daily business, I suppose.
Yeah, I think that has a big impact on people. And I think there's always that concern, isn't there, that particularly late at night or after dark, which it is getting up, but it's still getting dark early at the moment, creates challenges for our community, particularly feeling safe around walking around both around the facility, but also accessing it itself, the main leisure centre. So, yeah, absolutely.
And I know a lot of the reports, or certainly the instances that I've seen, it has been around sort of e-bikes and e-scooters, and they're not meant to be driven on public land. They really are for private use, or if they have the landowner's permission. Do we need to come down tougher on people that are sort of misusing these vehicles in public spaces?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Kent Police have been doing a good job in this regard, noting it's very difficult to police because, of course, part of the challenge is you have to actually catch somebody using them in the act, usually on public roads. But I think particularly on the use of electronic bikes in some cases in Cosington Park that are being used at 20 to 30 mile an hour, people have told me, across some of the open, and the nature of the park means that the number of the access pathways are very open and long, and have sort of driven particularly younger people, adolescents, to be sort of using those on those sort of long paths and hitting great speeds. So I think there is probably more we can do. And I think that, yeah, there is a role for the police, but also the wider community safety initiative in terms of driving down some of the use and also educating, working with some of our local schools and sick forms on some of that too.
Is there a topic that you would like to be discussed on the Kent Politics Podcast? Perhaps you've got a question for one of our panel, or you'd like to comment on a hot topic in local or national government. Get in touch by emailing or sending a voice note to kentpoliticspodcast@thekmgroup.co.uk.
MP Polly Billington has been chatting to us this week about how she's teamed up with artist Dame Tracy Emin and launched a bid to make Thanet the Isle of Culture for 2029. The UK City of Culture is a competition run by the Department for Culture, Media and Sport, aiming to support culture-led transformation. Cities, towns and regions put forward bids expressing why they think they should earn the title, and Thanet is certainly a contender. Just ask Madonna, who has become a big fan of Margate. Polly and Dame Tracy say the district's vibrant attractions deserve to be highlighted, especially as it has unique challenges as one of the most deprived areas in the South East. Here's what Polly had to say.
We've put together this bid and we're calling it Thanet Isle of Culture because Thanet is an island. It was an island, and after the Wantam Channel silted up, we became connected to the mainland. But we need to use culture to connect to each other as well as to the rest of England, to tell our story to each other and to the rest of the country, so that we can attract people to come here to enjoy what is a fantastically rich heritage of culture, right from the fact that the beginnings of the origins of the country begin in Thanet, with the Romans rocking up here, Vikings rocking up here, St. Augustine founding Christianity here. We've got some of the fundamentals of how Britain came to be Britain right here in Thanet. But also, importantly, it's about our future, about the fact that we have not been making the most of the sum. We end up being less than the sum of our parts because we don't work together as well as we could do. I'm bringing the whole isle together to celebrate who we are, our heritage, but also who we are now and what we'd like to be in the future. That's what's so exciting about this. And we originally thought that what we'd do is bid for the Town of Culture, which is a new prize. But I've got three towns in my constituency and each of them has an extraordinarily rich culture. And I didn't want them to be competing against each other. So it was brilliant that when I had the conversation with Tracy Emin, she said, no, we don't want to just do one town. Let's do the Isle of Culture. And I thought, that is why she is a global superstar artist. And let's make the most of that. So it's been brilliant. She and I have brought people together, just got a few people in the room to begin with. Like, what would an Isle of Culture bid look like? What do we think are the problems? How are we going to solve those problems with culture as part of our story? And one of the most important things is that culture is what you do when you're not at work, unless you work in the cultural and creative industries. And so we wanted to have that definition as wide as possible. So that's why we've got Ramsgate FC involved. That's why we've got Thanet Wanderers involved. That's why we're talking about health and well-being. It's a fundamental part of our culture because we started the seaside trend back in the 1700s. And we only had weekends. Working class people could only have weekends coming from London to Margate because the trade unions gave us a day off so that we could have a weekend. So we're right at the cutting edge of the holiday culture that is now an integral part of the seaside story of the UK. And we want to be able to celebrate that and work out what that means for us as a community going forward so we can make more of ourselves as a place where people really want to come and enjoy themselves, and that we all get a bit of the culture where sometimes it can feel a little bit exclusive.
In Maidstone, new survey findings have revealed the scale of concern around violence against women and girls across the borough. More than 1,250 people took part in Maidstone Council surveys, providing one of the most comprehensive local insights into lived experience, perceptions of safety, and the growing impact of online abuse. From the 664 adult respondents, 74% said they felt technological and online abuse was a very big problem, while 205 said they'd been victims of physical or sexual assault, with 245 experiencing emotional or psychological abuse. Young people took part in the survey too, and while the figures weren't quite as high, they were still worrying. Maidstone Council has been looking at the issue for some time, and alongside the survey findings is now moving forward with plans which will give people living in the borough a direct role in shaping future action. Here's Maidstone Councillor Dave Nagy.
Well, this is the idea of the surveys, to get the public's views, especially Maidstone Borough people, because that's our top priority. I want people, all people, to be safe in Maidstone, but especially women and girls. I want them to be safe, feel safe when they go out of an evening, not have to worry about things. But I'm afraid that's not what it's like at the moment out there. And the survey seems to be proving that.
What were some of the key aspects, I suppose, in the survey results that sort of sounded the biggest alarm bells?
Well, I'll just go through a few things. I mean, it's one of the most comprehensive local pictures we've had of violence against women and girls in Maidstone. And the scale of concern is quite stark, actually. Nearly three quarters of adults told us online that technical abuse is a major problem. Yet only 15% recognised it as violence. That gap is understanding and is deeply worrying, actually. People are changing how they live their lives to feel safe, from walking different routes to carrying different safety apps and whistles. And that should concern us all, actually. Life at the moment seems to be, you go out the door, do you feel safe? And it's, what's powerful is not just the concern, but the response. Our citizen deliberation program is fully subscribed because residents want to be part of the solution. And hopefully we will find some sort of solution. Obviously, we're not government, but in Maidstone Borough, we'll do our best to make sure everyone feeling safe, especially women and girls, when they go out. But by bringing people together, their lived experiences, young people's voices, professionals and charities, we're taking a joined up long-term approach to prevention and culture change, because I think that's basically one of the things is change, and the sooner the better.
So what is council doing? What can we do to reverse these statistics and help people feel safer on the streets?
Well, that's the idea of the survey. If we get what people thinking out there in our survey, and we've had a great response, we're covering all age groups, sexes and everyone. So we have got a wide cross-based public opinion when it's finished. So I think as it comes under me, that's one of my top priorities is girls against violence and women and girls is got to be a top priority. We can't go on like we are, you know. Has to change, and maybe this could be the stepping stone. I'm hoping the government will show interest in the survey, because I don't think anyone else is doing surveys like we're doing.
Okay, that's it from me for this week. Next week, we've a bumper edition featuring a couple of guests where we'll be doing more of a deep dive into the political scene. Until then, you can keep up to date with politics in Kent at Kent Online. And you can also sign up to our politics briefing newsletter at kentonline.co.uk/newsletters. And don't forget to tune in to KMTV's politics show every Friday at 5 p.m. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to the Kent Politics Podcast. Don't forget to check out stories throughout the week on the politics page of Kent Online. And you can watch the Kent Politics Show on KMTV every Friday at 5 p.m. or on demand at kmtv.co.uk.
This has been an I Am Listening original podcast. For more information, head over to our website, im-listening.co.uk.